Yeah. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
And Green Diva Lynn.
Yeah, and she's out there in Chicagoland.
I am. I'm dog sitting right now.
But we
for Green Diva Ellie.
Yeah, I was going to say
although
that.
My son's doing most of the work.
He's outside right now while we're on the air, and you're like, don't come in
yes,
yet.
Yes, they have three dogs.
Aw. So we have
Ellie's husband says, three dogs too many.
That's probably how my husband feels about the cats right about now. yeah, Kitty's in trouble. Lolo Kitty killed my phone. Nobody wants it. Yeah, you know, it's crazy stuff. Anyway, we have a very, very packed show with some really interesting stuff. I am, like, you know, all starry-eyed because I got to talk to Jeff Goodell, who is a contributing editor of Rolling Stone magazine and an author of five
Rock
books.
On.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, I'm like, you know, I've got Rolling Stone envy. You know, because I dreamed about being a Rolling Stone, like, writer, you know, way back in the day. Yeah, I confess
back
that.
Back in the hippie days?
Yeah, back in the day when I, you know, thought I was so groovy. And so anyway.
Oh,
and
you are groovy.
Yes, of course. And he's a great, great interview. You're going to really enjoy him. So we did a Meyer 360, and we talked about getting the lead out, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bummer. It's in chocolate, and you're going to want to hear about this, people.
Big bummer.
And then Kristen Arnett, another fabulous eco-style segment with Kristen Arnett, who is our sort of celebrity green makeup artiste. And I know she...
I think, isn't it a health and beauty?
I don't know. Well, we'll figure it
She's
out.
She's talking about cosmetic terms.
Yes, yes, exactly. So maybe it's health and beauty, right? Okay. But she's talking about, like, all the various terms people use in cosmetics, natural, organic.
Yeah,
what do they mean?
It's so confusing.
And she is brilliant and fun, and you're going to really enjoy that, and you're going to get a lot of information. Then, of course, we had Larry Kraft as a green dude, who's the executive director of iMatters Youth.
iMatter Youth.
So, you know, I just have to put a plug in for our app, people.
Oh,
it's on every platform. GDGD Radio now. You can pick it up from any of your mobile devices. It's all...
So exciting.
Yeah. So please do that. And also, while you're at it, go shopping. And we don't necessarily promote shopping, but you know what? You got to get stuff. Go to buygreen.com.
If you need something.
Go to buygreen.com. They got all this very, very thoughtful, sustainably made things. So go to thegreendivas.com and go to the marketplace, and right at the top, go right through there, man. Click through. It'll be worth it. So with that, I'm rushing us through because there's just so much to listen to, and we don't...
I know.
You know, like, we're just going to let you get right into it, people, so stay tuned.
Overwhelmed by environmental news? Listen to the Green Divas My Earth 360 Report for the latest eco news bits from around the globe, carefully curated and borne by our need to say WTF. But we also love to share encouraging stories and, of course, ways that you can make your voice count for the earth. It's not just my earth, it's our earth, and together we can make a difference.
Ooh, I love this segment because I know we're going to talk about chocolate.
I love chocolate.
But it isn't exactly, like, good news.
No, it's
bummer.
Not, and it's something I can't believe I didn't know about before.
I know. It's upsetting, right? So much.
It's very upsetting because I'm a chocolate addict.
Yeah.
And Green Diva confession, I've been eating the Trader Joe's dark chocolate.
All right. But who knew that that was a bad thing?
Well, it's not fair trade. It's not organic.
Oh, okay.
Blah, blah, blah.
Well, there you go.
And now I'm being, it's like the bad karma came back to haunt me because turns out it has lead in it.
Wow. And that's...
Yeah, so I'm being paid back for purchasing non-green chocolate.
Get the lead out, girl.
The universe is after me.
Well, okay, so obviously there's been a report recently that's exposing that a lot of dark chocolate has heavy metals, including
lead? Yeah, it's not just Trader Joe's. It's an organization called As You Sow, and they did some independent testing of 42 chocolate products for lead, and not just lead, but cadmium as well.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about Cadbury here. I'm talking cadmium.
I know. It's funny. It's the first thing that crossed my mind. Like, isn't that like a chocolate company? Yeah. Bummer.
And they found 26 out of the 42 contain lead and or cadmium levels, in which one serving exceeds the California safe harbor level for reproductive harm. I'm just reading from
their post. That's probably a standard, you know, for lead heavy metals.
And there's really no safe level for children. Some of the other ones I was surprised about.
Yeah.
Theo chocolate has cadmium.
Ooh.
Whole Foods, 365 every day organic dark chocolate. What? Lead and cadmium.
The organic?
Yes, indeed.
How do they get that through organic standards? I didn't know that, like, lead was organic, you know, part of the stand. I guess it's they don't have that criteria.
Well, yeah, it's not like they're growing it in lead.
Yeah,
the source can be the atmosphere.
Wow.
You know, there's lead that comes from man-made industrial processes.
Yeah.
That is deposited into the soil. And so they're not really necessarily testing the soil.
Yeah.
I don't know. You'd think for organic.
Well, it's sort of like this whole issue with arsenic and rice. I mean, come on.
Well, true.
You know? So,
well, it can also happen during the manufacturing process.
Okay.
So I'm going to start looking. I'm just either not going to eat chocolate or do the raw chocolate because that's less processed.
Well, is there a list?
Processing.
Is there a list we can
post? Of those that need warning labels.
Okay, but that's upsetting.
They're saying that we should have warning labels, and I agree. And there's a list of those they tested that don't need warning labels.
Wow. All right. Well, I know
milk chocolate is actually on the list, but I try to stay away from that for other reasons.
It doesn't even appeal to me anymore. You know what I mean? It's just too
sweet.
I know. Now, we have to close this out, but I know that Lynn will have a good post with all the details.
I will. Directly from the organization that put this report out.
Great. Thank you, Green Diva Lynn. Wow. Now I'm going to have to go check out my chocolate. All right, stay tuned, folks.
I have my lead today, I'll tell you. I'm down to my last square, and I'm moving on.
All right, stay tuned.
Get all the details from this Green Diva's My Earth 360 report and lots more on thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com, and myearth360.com.
Every Green Diva needs a sidekick. At the Green Divas radio show, they're called Green Dudes. Time now for a deeper shade of green from a guy's perspective.
Well, I am really excited today to speak to Larry Kraft, who's the executive director of I Matter Youth, which is Kids Versus Global Warming. And this is an organization that's all about empowering youth. And let's face it, they are the future. And they're empowering youth to help get the message across to all of us to live as if our future matters, as if their future matters to us, those of us who are further along. Hi, Larry.
Hello. Hi, Meg.
I am so in love with the work you're doing, and I just saw the video that's on your homepage now, which really is a great, concise description and very, I want to say, encouraging. Like, it's so exciting for me to see young people passionate about these issues, and the way y'all are going about it, you'll see on if you go to the website, which is imatteryouth.org. Did I get that right? Oh, yeah.
You got it right.
imatteryouth.org. Go there, people. And you'll see that the organization also follows sort of a political – they have some political structure so that young people can get involved and understand how the political structure works, which I think is brilliant. I just think it's the whole thing is brilliant. So tell me, how did you get involved with all this?
That's a great question. So You know, I come out of the tech world. I had been running sales and marketing for about a $200 million company here in Minneapolis, where I live. And I left that job about a year and a half ago, and really because I have two kids that are now 10 and 8.
Yeah.
And as I got more and more information about what's going on climate change, I realized that it was time for me to try to do something about it. So I left the tech world. In the interim, there was something else my wife and I wanted to do. We're big travelers, and so we actually took our kids on a year around the world adventure.
Wow. I've heard people, you know, I've always wished I had done that with my children. Wow.
Yeah. It was phenomenal. But we were educating them, but we focused on environmental issues everywhere we went.
Wow.
We connected with local environmental organizations. And we partnered with a nonprofit here in the U.S., and we were creating weekly educational content for a group called the Wilderness Classroom that has about 85,000 elementary and middle school kids that follow them. So we were doing this, and during this trip, you know, a woman came to me with an idea of a Buy Kids for Kids organization. And I loved this idea, and I helped her frame it, and we created some slides, and I started talking to people about it. And through that, someone else who's been on your show, Harriet Sugarman,
who I met
through Climate Reality.
Oh, that's probably how we got connected, right?
It is. It is. And Harriet said, you know, you should talk to my friend Victoria Loras at iMatter. And we started talking maybe 6 or 7 months ago, initially about partnering, and then around the time of the People's Climate March, she suggested that I become the executive director of iMatter and kind of help try to take them to a next level. And so that's how I got involved.
Well, it's happening. It's working. Whatever you're doing is working. You know, you've helped them. You guys have organized marches. I don't know if conjunction, obviously, with the Climate March, probably.
Well, so we were at the Climate March, but I'll give you the background of iMatter. So iMatter was founded by Alec Loras with support from his mother, Victoria, about 8 years ago. And Alec was 12 when he saw the movie Inconvenient Truth. And it blew him away. And he decided he wanted to go get educated. So he applied to Gore's organization, and they declined him. They told him he was too young.
Right.
So Alec went and created his own slide deck and started giving it. Well, he's now spoken to over 750,000 people.
Wow.
He's won the Brower Youth Award. He's won the Coretta Scott King Award. He's been all over the world. He's been before Congress. Really an amazing now young adult.
Yeah.
And so, you know, about a year, 2 years ago, Alec went to college, and the organization was kind of in a bit of a holding pattern of, okay, what, you know, where are we going to go next? How are we going to leverage this great stuff and this great foundation that we've created? And, you know, that's where, you know, I connected with them, and what we're kind of trying to do is work with the existing youth council, kind of the passionate youth that are youth leaders that are still involved.
Yeah.
And we've put together kind of a new strategy going forward to try to take this great stuff that they've done and amplify it.
Well, it's pretty interesting. And in the video, there was a section where there was a congressman. Was it a congressman or a senator?
It was a former congressman.
Yes.
A fellow by the name of Bob Inglis. And he started an initiative called the Energy and Enterprise Initiative. But Bob is really interesting because he's from Greenville, South Carolina, and a very conservative views and conservative congressman.
Right.
He was in Congress for several years, and then he was running again, and his son, and he has, you know, several kids, his son came to him and said, Dad, look, I'm you know, just turned 18, and I'll vote for you, but you need to clean up your act on the environment.
I love that. I just thought, oh, that's fabulous.
And, you know, you should watch the video because Bob tells it, you know, much, much better than I do. But so he did. He looked at it, and he realized that his position needed to change. And so he made a big shift. Now, he was subsequently, he lost elections there. But he's now on a mission and to talk to conservative audiences and talk in the right and convince them that it's the values, that it's consistent with their values to support action on climate.
See, now that is encouraging and that's hopeful. And I think that is so much of what we do here when I talk to people who are, whatever their passion is regarding the environment or food. It so often is the case that they started when they had children or it had something to do with their kids. We are obviously, those of us that are parents can testify that there have been life-changing experiences when it comes to either having children and you realize that you want to clean up their environment, the environment in the home, but you start to see things differently. And when your son or daughter, 18 or whatever, comes up to you and says, hey, man, I would you please look at this carefully for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the reason I'm involved with iMatter, you know, my kids obviously are a key driver here, but it's also because I believe youth can play a huge role in what needs to happen to get on the winning side of this issue.
And yeah, I think
it's
you're
really
right.
For a few reasons. Number one, and maybe most importantly, you know, youth can connect viscerally, can connect emotionally with people. And we need to turn this from a science fact-based issue to an emotional connection issue. And I think youth can do that more quickly and better than probably any other constituency out there.
Yeah.
So secondly, you know, virtually everyone shares a emotional connection to youth, right? Regardless of your background, it's something we all, you know, virtually all share in some way, concern for the next generation. And then, you know, lastly is that, you know, if you really think about this, on this issue, the youth are being, you know, unjustly impacted by our policies on climate change and
right.
in the world that they're going to have to live in.
Yep.
And I think if you look throughout history, what we've learned is that those unjustly impacted must speak out and be heard for real change to happen. So mm-hmm. you know, I think empowering youth, elevating their opinion, showing that their opinion now really matters more than anyone else's, is a way to help you know, connect much more emotionally and get us on the winning side of this.
It's a good strategy, and it's just true. I mean, so much, you know, the definitions people have and hold of sustainability has to do with future, has to do with how what we do today that impacts the future. And it really is going to be in the hands of our children and, of course, future generations. But they're present. They are present. They should have a say. And who's to say that they might not be smarter?
Well, so I there's several stories I tell about my kids, and you know, this is a very simple one. When we were on this trip and we were teaching our kids about climate changes relative to some of the places we were going, you know, we talked to my daughter about it, and she said, she thought about it for a minute, and she said, "Well, Daddy, let's just stop it."
Seems
and
simple.
You know what? It's simple, it's direct, and it's true. Right?
Yeah.
As adults, sometimes we get wrapped up in the complexity of issues and all the minute details and all that. But really, at base, we just need to stop it. And there are plenty of ways to do that. And I think kids can make that point and change people's priorities and views on this enough that we can make real progress. So I'm very optimistic.
And you know what? We need a dose of optimism. And there's nothing like youth to bring energy, a fresh perspective, and optimism to any subject. But, you know, environmental issues can be so heavy and scary and overwhelming that I particularly look forward to speaking to more kids.
Yeah. They can be optimistic and yet also very direct, which is, I mean, I've seen my kids say things to my parents that there's no way I could say to them.
Yeah, you know, right.
But it's a way of getting through.
Different generation, but like your daughter said to you with such innocent clarity, just stop it. And like,
It'd
be nice if we could
respond that. You can't respond that by, oh, it's hard. It's like, okay, yep, let's go do it.
Let's go do it. And, you know, could somebody please stand in the middle of Congress and Senate in this whatever down in Washington and just say, hey, everybody, just stop it. We need your daughter to go down there. Put her foot down, man.
Oh, yeah, she would love that, actually.
Well, but you know what you're doing with your organization, from what I can see, is you're giving the tools to kids to, you know, give them the voice that they have and how to use it. And I think you're also grooming kids who have a desire to make a difference and be change agents as they grow to slip into politics or whatever it's going to take to change, change legislation and change policy and change the way we do things.
Absolutely. I mean, some of these youth that I've been exposed to now in my four short months with the organization, you know, starting from Alec, but then beyond that to some of the people on the video and others, I mean, they're impressive, and they're going to do some amazing things. And maybe the unfortunate, and I think it's great that we're going to help that, but maybe the unfortunate side of that is not only do we need them to do amazing things, you know, when they become of voting age and beyond,
right,
but we need to empower and listen to them now. I mean,
yes,
we can't wait for that.
No, and I mean, I can't think of like one off the top of my head, but you know how many of these videos that go viral of kids. Like, there's a TED Talk with this kid who's, like, 9, who, like, freaking nails it about GMOs.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's so riveting because you're like, okay, yeah, how can you not believe – how can you not listen to this kid?
Yeah.
And they're brilliant. Yeah. And, to some degree, they don't have some of the shadows of cynicism that we collect as we move along and grow up, even though I work hard to remove them every day. And you must
have to stay in touch with your inner youth.
Yeah, we do. And I am looking forward to, because you and I have talked about it a little bit, we are definitely going to schedule some of your wonderful youth activists to come on the show and talk. Because we got to hear from them too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they're the whole point of this conversation, but I just want to applaud you for stepping into this work and helping to empower these kids.
Thank you.
Yay.
Yeah. One thing I want to add. So you talked about the TED Talk, and if you look at the video on our site, it's very powerful, I think. But the other thing that we've thought about and the stuff we're as we kind of retool and planning is that those things are very powerful, but they're even more powerful when you know the youth, when it's your kid or someone speaking up to you. So, our focus in the stuff that we're planning a campaign called I Matter Now, but it's to elevate youth opinion, but to do so in a way, a very community-focused,
yes,
so that youth are speaking to parents, to grandparents within school, so that it does become personal to people.
Well, I mean, and that, like the story about the congressman whose son said, "Hey, I'll vote for you, but you got to get your act together." I mean, he got through. Whatever shadows of cynicism was around that congressman, his son got through. So perhaps our children can get through.
Mm-hmm. Yay. I am convinced that they can, and that, if you look at, there's so many surveys out about climate change and people's opinions in the U.S. And what we're seeing now is that, the majority of people now accept that it's happening and caused by humans.
Right.
Which is great. But at the same time, when you look at how people rank it as in priority lists of what drives their vote,
right,
what things they're concerned about, it's way down at the bottom. So there's this caring gap,
yeah,
right, and making it emotion. And this is where, we think youth can play a huge role is, this is really important. It is the economy,
Right, right. Bridging the gap. Because I had this argument with an old friend on Facebook, one of those little poop storms that occurs when someone, just whatever, have a conservative friend that was like, no, we can't deal with climate change. We've got to, national security issues. And I said, well, honestly, it was about the Keystone Pipeline is what it was about. I said, but isn't energy a key issue in national security? I mean, hello. I don't know. I could rant and rave forever, honestly.
Yeah. But you bring up a thing. It is important. And one of the things we're trying to do and as we kind of pilot this and things is we really want to reach out to multiple different constituencies. So one of our pilot cities will be in a very conservative-leaning place where we have to figure out how to communicate this and how to have kids to be able to connect with it in blue America, in red America, in purple America.
Right. Everywhere America.
Yep.
It matters. I Matter Youth. Awesome. Thanks so much for calling in today, Larry, and I'm looking forward to working with you to get some of your awesome team to call in.
Fantastic. Thanks. I really appreciate it.
And by the way, everybody, go to imatteryouth.org and check it out.
Want more information on this Green Dude segment and other ideas for low-stress green living? Go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
There are at least 20,000 known species of bees in the world. But it's what we don't know about this amazing insect that might be one of the biggest challenges we face with regard to the environment in the next 20 years. More on that after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order tall grass beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
A Cornell University study estimates that honeybees annually pollinate $14 billion worth of seeds and crops in the United States. Essentially, if honeybees disappear, they could take most of our insect-pollinated plants with them. The past 6 years have brought about a condition called CCD, or colony collapse disorder, an acceleration in the annual die-off of bees that some experts believe has to do with sprayed-on pesticides. While there are big problems when it comes to long-term sustainability, it might just turn out that the bee contains our greatest chance for survival. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
Vibrant health and beauty radiates from the inside out. Get your glow on with Green Diva's health and beauty tips, from natural skincare to creating healthier habits that make us sparkle. Well, aren't I a happy Green Diva? I finally got Kristen Arnett into the studio. Yay! Hi, Kristen.
Hi.
And how would you, you've got so many wonderful titles. I think of you as a stylist, as a, really fabulous makeup artist.
Mm-hmm.
But how would you introduce yourself?
It's a pretty long introduction when I do the whole thing. So,
but I want you to.
I call myself an international celebrity green makeup artist and the founder of Green Beauty Team.
Oh, I like that. See that? All right. I apologize that I didn't have that all under. I knew that you are an international celebrity green because I see you traveling everywhere and doing all kinds of fun things.
Yeah.
I can't wait till I can afford you.
We're getting there. That comment a lot. Like, could you come to my house every day?
Yeah.
Like, wow, if only we could just pull all the women together and, everyone could just have like a co-op of me.
Yeah, right? Well, anyway, so I'm excited to see you in person and have you here in the studio.
Thank you.
And on this snowy winter day.
I'm excited to be here.
I know. We're having fun already. So today you're going to talk to us a bit about some of the terms that we might see on cosmetics in particular, or natural skincare products, or so-called, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's all these terms we see. Cruelty-free. I see gluten-free. I got this whole set
I think it was Tilth. Is that the company? Are you familiar with them? T-I-L-T-H? Am I pronouncing it wrong?
Well, there's the Oregon Tilth, which is a certification organization for organics.
Really? Well, there's some company
called Tilth,
and they're all gluten-free. And I thought, what the heck is gluten-free cosmetics? So anyway, all these vegan, cruelty-free, gluten-free. Tell us what some of these things mean.
You know, that's the tricky thing is some of them don't mean much.
Yeah.
So people,
that's a bummer.
Yeah, people are really getting a lot of words thrown at them. And I think, you know, any woman is already a little bit confused going into a beauty section. And then you add in a bunch of terms that have really no legal definitions behind them. And it is even more confounding. I mean, something like gluten-free, though, that's pretty specific. You know, that's telling you that the ingredients are not obviously containing anything that would have gluten as
a part of it. Well, I guess that may have a medical implication for somebody who has a serious celiac or other.
But I think as a normal consumer, avoiding cosmetics with gluten is kind of just not a priority in terms of what I consider to be priorities for being green and healthy.
Yeah, right. So you see vegan, I always think, well, does that mean I can eat it?
Right. And it's funny, too, because vegan, I think, gives us a sense that we're getting a product that is actually healthier and somehow more natural and holistic. Mm-hmm. But what vegan means is that none of the ingredients in the product are animal derived. So yes, it might be missing beeswax or lanolin that comes from an animal source, but you also might be getting a huge host of synthetic chemicals, none of which may be safe.
Right. So it may be actually healthier for the lamb or whatever, the sheep that didn't give up the lanolin.
Well, yeah.
But not necessarily for us. So you really have to be careful.
Yes.
And I know, you know, there are no regulations, right, for the terms natural or organic when it comes to cosmetics, correct?
Unfortunately not. Yeah. You know, there are private retailers like Whole Foods that have set certain standards where on packaging that's in their stores, in their whole body department, if it says organic, it has to be 75% organic ingredients within the product. But that's Whole Foods setting the standard.
Yeah,
that has nothing to do with our FDA or any of the cosmetics sort of certifications or bodies that are out there.
So in some cases, it's really a crapshoot. If somebody says this is organic and natural, it could be really anything.
Pretty much, yeah.
I hate that.
I know. And, you know,
I don't like that.
I know. It's so frustrating, too, because I think so many people have such good intentions when they go to a store and they see the green leaf and they see the beautiful, you know, implication of something natural. And it's really hard when we've got so many other priorities in our lives to turn a bottle around, read the ingredients, and then have a clue.
Well, and even have a retention. Like me, I would have to have a list in front of me what to look for and then look down because I can't pronounce them. I don't retain those names. But there are, I know, some companies that I trust. And I've learned over the years, you know, to trust a handful of companies, and there are new ones coming along all the time.
Absolutely.
Thankfully. So are there any like lines that you recommend that you know are pretty clean?
There are so many now.
Isn't that nice?
Isn't
that nice?
Yeah. It's fantastic. I think one of my favorites in terms of skincare, hair care, and an overall wellness-based line, it has been Intelligent Nutrients.
Okay.
And the founder of Intelligent Nutrients was the original founder of Aveda.
Okay.
And what he learned from Aveda in building it and the sort of, you know, zigs and zags he had to make because of the technology available in green chemistry at the time was different than it is now. It's much more advanced now. So he used his lifelong learning and put it into Intelligent Nutrients to make it a very, very sustainable, organic, pure line. And Horst was his name, and he passed away last February.
That's too bad.
And I had the opportunity to meet him and talk with him and go to his farm. And I mean, when you get to see the man and the surroundings and his team and now his daughter and partner who run the business, you feel the integrity.
Right.
And so this isn't a sales pitch for their line, but I think
but you know personally that they are doing what they say they're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it takes somebody who is vigilant.
Yes.
To really put in the kind of
I don't think
care.
It's easy for a manufacturer to keep a clean standard based on availability and resources. Now,
it's expensive.
And it's very expensive. Yeah. So, now what about cosmetics? Because of course you
makeup.
Being a makeup
yeah.
girl. Not that you even need makeup. Oh my God. And she was coming over today and I thought, oh darn, I don't even have any makeup on. I'm going to have to go put some on.
People say that all the time, but I'm not judging you in any way.
I know. She's thinking, what could I do with those eyes? So tell me a little bit about maybe a couple of companies. Like I've bought Ecobella before. Mm-hmm. Is that a good line?
It is a good line.
Because I like them.
Yeah.
I do well with them.
Yep.
I have super sensitive skin. So
yes.
anything around my eyes and lips, whatever, I have to be careful.
Well, that's an interesting thing. So I like Ecobella. They're a great line. They have some very nice pigments and color selections. RMS Beauty is another cult favorite.
I don't know them.
Oh.
I'm writing it down.
RMS Beauty was designed by a makeup artist named Rosemary Swift, who I am now lucky to call a friend.
Oh, cool.
And she is also a vigilant person in the world of cosmetics. Her line is raw organic food grade ingredients.
Oh.
And it's beautiful,
nice.
But it's
okay.
all creamy pigments.
Yep.
It's a great line to check out. You know, Well People is another.
I don't know that one either.
Well, you've got to know Well People. This is another example of a brand owner. Shirley Pinkson is the co-founder, and she was a makeup artist. Is a makeup artist.
Right.
Was one for many, many years in the traditional cosmetics market, and you can really tell when a line is formulated by people who understand.
Yeah.
Makeup artistry.
Yeah, because I mean, I've tried because you must know that they send me stuff all the time.
Sure.
I get things to review, and sometimes it's like well intentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know Reiki charged and all kinds of cool stuff, but it just like slides off your face,
right?
And you're like, okay, but that's not working for me,
right? Which is you know, I think that was really the major thing about. Let's say 10 years ago, I mean, good luck finding cosmetics that actually were effective and worked on the marketplace for a variety of people's skin tones and all sorts of things. And now what's coming up out of the U.S., Canada, and Australia are the main places I see these wonderful makeup lines coming from. So now you have, you know, all of a sudden now I'm blanking on all my favorites.
That's all right.
But you know what? What's interesting is on my Instagram, I will go and even today
I
posted.
Saw one. Yeah.
I'll post some products that I'm either using on set at a photo shoot or that I put on myself and I'll tag the brands in there. So today there was also Santé and Lagona, which are German brands that are distributed through Whole Foods.
Mm-hmm.
They're a reasonable price point. You know, I think people really think organic and natural makeup is going to be very expensive. And they're effective. The brand's been around for a very long time. And so they make cosmetics that are actually, you know, doing what you expect and want them
to do. Well, that's, I mean, so basically people can say anything they want on a package. It's important to understand the company behind the product so you know that there's integrity. So this is why we have someone like you. That's why I'm asking you, like, what companies. So let's wrap up this segment because we're going to have some other segments with you in the future. So I really want everybody to tune in. In the meantime, how can people find you?
I would love it if people came to greenbeautyteam.com. And there you can find all of the beauty advice for skin, makeup, and hair.
Apparently, I need to bookmark that one. Okay. Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you.
Are you sparkling yet? Well, you will be. For information on this segment and lots of other healthy, green living information, visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
Wow. Okay, so I've got like sort of rock star envy going on here because we have a Rolling Stone contributing editor, among other things. I mean, Jeff Goodell is very cool, and he's an author of 5 books and literally cool because he's helping us try to figure out how to cool the planet. One of his books is How to Cool the Planet, Geoengineering and the Audacity, the Audacious, I can't even read my handwriting, the Audacious Quest to Fix the Earth's Climate. And also, of course, Big Coal. But let's talk to Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm great. And I'm, like I said before, I'm all starry-eyed Rolling Stone envy and all that. You're so cool. So, I mean, you know, one of the things Lynn and I had talked about briefly in talking to you was how you, you know, parlayed your interest in environment and climate change into sort of a mainstream gig, like a paid gig. There's a lot of us out here that don't really, we're not working for Rolling Stone. So can you talk about that for a minute?
Well, it sort of happened the other way around. I started off as a journalist covering things like police departments in New York City, the police department in New York City.
Oh, well, that's exciting.
Politics. The first piece I did for Rolling Stone was Bill Clinton in New Hampshire when he was first running for president.
All right.
So I kind of got into it backwards. I got into it. I was a journalist first. And my interest in environmental and climate stuff really happened in 2000, right after George W. Bush was elected. And there was, I don't know if your listeners remember, but there was the Bush-Cheney Energy Plan, it was called. And it was about the whole comeback of gas and oil and fossil fuels. And the New York Times actually called me up and asked me to go to West Virginia and write about the comeback of the coal industry. And because I'm a Californian and because I didn't pay much attention to environmental or energy issues, I had no idea that we burned coal in America at all. I had no clue.
You're like, what?
I thought it was something that went out with, like, Charles Dickens and, 19th century kind of stuff.
Right. Are there really coal miners still?
Right. So I went to West Virginia not having ever seen coal before in my life. When I went to the first time I went to a coal mine, I saw this pile of black stuff, and I thought, oh, that must be coal. That's what it looks like.
Deductive reasoning working for you.
Exactly. But it turned out to be, to me, a kind of incredibly eye-opening moment for me and really important in my thinking, because I grew up in Silicon Valley and this place where all the land of, I worked at Apple in the early days and was really interested in the rise, and I wrote about the rise of the internet and all that kind of thing, but I never really thought about where those electrons came from and what the consequences of, use of electricity is.
Being plugged in.
I saw this in West Virginia. I really understood that it was like going into the land of the orcs or something, the sort of underbelly.
Dirty.
Of American industrial life. And I spent a couple months there, wrote a big piece for the New York Times Magazine that turned out to be a cover story, and I just realized that this was just a huge subject that I had not really given any thought about and was really important for the future of this country and the planet, and I just threw myself into it, and it just really is one of those moments that kind of changed my life. And so from then on, basically, I've more or less done nothing but write about energy and climate stuff.
Well, and we're all benefiting from that because you are such a great writer and journalist, and, you bring the professionalism to the story, and you have access, and you know how to create access, and, you hit some pretty heavy, heavy veins, speaking of the coal kind of, the coal analogy, some heavy veins of what's really going on here. And, for instance, your latest article in Rolling Stone is about climate change and national security. And, it sort of flies in the face of a lot of these conservative folks that are, also hawks. And, they don't want to really believe in climate change, but hello. And you write, you went down to Norfolk, Virginia.
Right. Norfolk, Virginia is the biggest naval base in the world, and it is going to be underwater in the next 40 or 50 or 60 years, and problems of sea level rise are going to cause enormous problems for our military, for the Navy. Obviously, having to move these bases around is also going to cause big problems for the Air Force with a lot of their bases around the world, and it's also changing You know, the climate change, the effects of climate change, things like drought and famine are having impacts on, you know, wars around the world. In the Middle East, the fight in Syria right now was in some degree accelerated and triggered by drought. We're seeing it in parts of Africa, places like that. So the military, the great thing about the military is that, you know, they're very practical-minded, you know. They can't afford ideology. They have to deal with the world as it is and what they see.
Right.
And they're really seeing the world change, and they're really understanding that climate change is going to be, in the words of some military leaders, a catalyst for conflict, and they're very concerned about that.
There's a lot of discussion and projection that water is going to become the next oil. People are going to really fight for water.
Yeah.
As you mentioned.
Yeah, and food prices go up. That adds stress.
Yeah.
You have a lot of people moving around as their crops fail and things like that, and it just is, you know, a big problem. And you have more and more disasters where the military will be called in to provide relief and aid, and it, you know, then you also have things that are really significant, like the melting of the Arctic and the rush for resources and things up there. And so there basically has a lot of top people in the military freaked out, and I thought that was a pretty great story.
Well, it is a great story, and what's great about it is that they are waking up, and of course they do have some of the resources at their disposal to do some research and hopefully accelerate some of the research on alternative energy, and I believe they are doing that in some of the branches.
Oh yeah, the Navy's done a lot of really important and interesting work on green fuels, biofuels, things like that. They've been really progressive. You know, for them, it's a simple battlefield efficiency. You know, I mean, they need to be able to move around better. They need to not be dependent on supply lines of oil and gas and things like that.
Right.
They're a very progressive part of this. And, you know, one of the interesting things, of course, is that many of the biggest fossil fuel defenders and climate deniers are also big supporters of the military. It kind of puts them in a bind of, like, when you have the, you know, Pacific commander who's in charge of all the forces in the Pacific region telling Congress that, you know, climate change is the biggest threat America faces in the future, they have to listen.
So this is kind of slightly scary stuff, but, you know, also optimistic with that they are taking notice and taking action. So there is some reason to be optimistic there, and validating, I guess, for those that still want to deny, like, hello, your own commanders, whatever. So tell me, what story have you done that really sunk in to your gut and said, oh dear, this is not good?
Well, I think, you know, I think in the last few years, the story that I've done that I think has really sunk in for me and also touched a lot of nerves and kind of caused a lot of commotion was I did a piece a year ago for Rolling Stone about what sea level rise is going to do to Miami. And basically, you know, obviously sea level rise is something that's going to happen everywhere along the coast. But some places are more and less defensible and can adapt and change, and there's all kinds of different solutions. For Miami, there really is no solution.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really have to think about, you know, the end of Miami within the next 50 or 60 or 70 years, certainly the Miami that we know.
Right.
Because there's no building seawalls. There's no way to deal with this. And so that has huge implications. I mean, the idea that we're going to essentially lose a great American city like Miami.
Oh, all those wonderful Art Deco, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's an incredible place. And it's so vibrant and alive. And So I think that story had a lot of resonance for me, just simply because one of the hard things to get your brain around, at least for me, on a story about climate change, any story about climate change, is the scope of it. You know, this isn't just about it's about this transformation of the Earth, really, and of the world that we live in.
Right.
And when you think about a big city like Miami kind of going away, then you start to understand what we're really talking about here.
Well, there'll be some serious issues in New York City because there are things like right up against the water. I mean, there's just nowhere to go.
Yeah, but New York City's in a better shape for a variety of reasons. It's got Manhattan's got high ground to retreat to. It's built on granite. You can build seawalls if you need to. I mean, it's going to have implications for sure. But
so you really have done your homework. Because I've seen horrible projections of what New York City is going to be like in, 100 years or something. And, it's all – a lot of it is projection because really we don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow. So shifting now gears, I want to ask you, what was the most inspiring regarding climate change? What's the most inspiring story you've worked on recently or ever for that matter?
Yeah. I find inspiration in activists and people who are actively standing up and fighting for things.
Yeah.
So in places like West Virginia, where you have some amazingly brave people who are standing up against the coal industry and demanding clean energy, people like a woman named Maria Gonneau, who's sort of well-known in Appalachia as a coal activist. I've spent some time with her and hiked around some of these mountaintop removal mines. And, these are people who are actually putting their lives on the line to try to help change our energy system, And so that's certainly on one level, people that I find inspiring. And then on the highest political level, I find, people like Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island very inspiring. He's very straightforward. He's very clear talking about the urgency of transforming to cleaner energy. He's really doing everything he can to make this the priority issue. And also people like John Podesta, who just left the White House, who was President Obama's special counsel, who really did an amazing job of kind of spearheading some of President Obama's recent initiatives on climate.
And you got to give Obama credit. He's doing the best he can. I believe this is an important issue that he's bringing to the forefront as his lame duck year approaches, right?
Well, I think that, he certainly didn't give this the attention that it needed early in his first term or in his first term at all.
Right.
And, kind of blew the whole cap and trade legislation thing in shortly after he was elected. But in his second term now, he's really made it a priority, clearly, and has done some really significant things. Obviously, not enough and all that, but I think that he sees this. In fact, I'm sure he sees this as one of his two or three real legacy issues.
Yes,
and
I do
so
too.
I think we're going to see more and more action on it.
Yeah, and thank God he signed the veto on the Keystone XL. For those of us who think that was a stupid thing. Not everybody does, but I personally do. I'm out about that. So I had another question, and so are you working on another book, and is it related to climate change?
I am working on another book, and it's actually related to the story about Miami that I just talked about. It's basically a big expansion of that Rolling Stone piece. It's about sea level rise and how it's going to change our world.
Yeah.
But it's built around Miami
right.
and a couple of other places.
Well, I think it's really good to anchor a story like that. And like you said, it gives you a profound illustration of this is real world. This is what's happening. And every once in a while I see a picture of some beautiful island somewhere in the Pacific. And it's like, this island will not be here.
Right.
In 50 years. And you're like, wow, really? That's kind of a bummer.
Yeah. One of the challenges for all of us who cover this in any medium or any form is, trying to figure out ways to tell stories about this and that people care about it. And it can help people see and understand the consequences of what's at stake here. And, I find that to be a real challenge because it's really easy for people to tune out. It's really easy for it to become, as other people have said, kind of like hunger in Africa. It's just like, well, we're very sorry about it, but, what's on TV tonight kind of thing.
Well, it's overwhelming, and a lot of people feel like they can't make a difference. So, going back to your, inspiration, the people that are active, and I feel the same way, and as Green Divas, our message is always about, here's a problem. But we never just dump the problem out and say, bummer, bye-bye. you know, we like to offer some kind of solution, some way that you can make a difference in this. And sometimes it's making a call to a senator. Sometimes it's recycling that box. Sometimes, you know what I mean? It's making a different choice about what we purchase or how we purchase. But, you know, it sounds like you're very similarly minded. You know, did you watch The Years of Living Dangerously?
I did. I thought it was terrific.
It was. And we interviewed, like, everybody in the fourth episode. That was around coal and shutting down the coal mines down in, I think it was, North Carolina. And we interviewed Marianne Hitt and Anna Jane Joyner and a couple of other people. We didn't get Ian Somerhalder, but, you know, we were lucky just to mention his name, apparently, because he's a very busy guy. But the whole thing for us was I was watching these episodes, and they were beautiful. OMG. There were things in there that even though I am immersed in this, I didn't really know. And I was like, whoa. And the way that they structured it, I mean, of course, it was absolutely brilliant. But it was really depressing. The first three episodes, I thought, oh, I can't keep watching this. This is just really scaring and upsetting me. I don't want my grandchildren to watch it. But then the fourth episode, finally, that's when, you know, I started to feel a little better. And I think the whole reason is that these people got active, regardless of whether the Reverend Anna Jane Joyner's father, you know, agreed that climate change was real or not, which was an interesting angle. But you saw so much action with the Sierra Club's, you know, Beyond Coal campaign, people getting on there, and they're shutting down plants everywhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, there's hope. Yay, I feel better. All right.
Yeah, well, it's tricky. I mean, it's hard. I mean, because, you know, being passive and tuning out is really easy to do, but it's like the worst thing that one can do in this kind of situation. And it's hard to keep optimistic because the challenges are so huge. And, you know, we want to think that there's a solution, you know, but there's really not a solution. There is, you know, a better and worse versions of things.
Well, it's like it's an adaptation. You know, how are we going to adapt to what is, like, you know, like you mentioned before. And actually, we did a really interesting interview with Rolly Montpelier, who's Boomer Warrior, but he's doing a whole series with us about climate change and depression. And people like you and I that are immersed in this, or scientists even, that just are getting really kind of bogged down with a lot of scary statistics. And it's kind of interesting. But I personally think the work that you're doing and the way you present things is brilliant and not horrifyingly depressing. And so I just want you to keep doing what you're doing, and I hope you'll talk to us again as more things evolve.
Well, thank you very much. I'll be happy to.
All right. Anything you want our listeners to go check out after they're done listening and they want more Jeff?
No, I think just go to Rolling Stone's website and have a look. There's a bunch of stuff on there.
And tell them the Green Divas and Jeff sent you.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks so much, Jeff, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. Please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.